ready to proceed?
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May I please the court? J.R. Julian on behalf of Appellant Standard Distributing in this case. The court, I know, is well aware of the issues in this case. Otherwise, we would not be having an en banc argument, obviously. The issue, though, I would like to frame it for the court, if I may. The issue that the court has to decide is, in a workers' compensation case, how is the Daubert standard applied? How can it be applied as a practical matter? Now, we pointed out in our opening brief, I believe it was the brief, that these workers' compensation cases can be anything from small cases involving relatively minor amounts of money and issues, but they can also be enormous cases involving hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. So the question becomes, can we apply Daubert to these cases so we have the benefit of Daubert in these cases? We get the benefit of Daubert in Superior Court cases, and, for example, in District Court cases, but can we have it in workers' comp cases? And that's where the problem arises, because in a Superior Court case, Daubert arises in a structured setting where there's been discovery, interrogatories, requests for admissions, discovery depositions of not only the non-experts, but the experts, obviously. And under that, in that context, it's possible to present a Daubert motion, or at least present it and have a hearing if the court thinks it's appropriate. That's up to the court to decide. So in that circumstance, all these things fall into play in a logical way. In a workers' compensation case, it happens at warp speed.
Isn't your point that it's just impossible procedurally to do that under the current practice before the Industrial Accident Board? Because at most, each side gets a half hour, and you know, basically there's no time to go through a full-blown Daubert proceeding, and the board wouldn't want to hear it anyway.
Well, Your Honor,
that unless there is an amendment to the rules under which the board operates, the way the procedure would work under your view of what the law should be is that the workman's comp or workers' comp hearing goes forward, an award is entered, and then if there's an appeal, the party that's aggrieved because the expert testimony wasn't filtered through Daubert raises that for the first time in the Superior Court. So every workers' comp case, not every, but many, would involve a de novo, or maybe for the first time, Daubert hearing, live, or summary judgment.
Well, we're not actually proposing a Daubert hearing on appeal. I agree with what Your Honor said in the first part. I believe correctly recites our position. But we're not asking for a Daubert hearing in Superior Court. What we're asking for is simply to apply the Daubert standard as part of the substantial evidence test to test whether the testimony that was given met the standards.
But that would have to be done as an original matter with no record, or at least no, with nothing to review at the Superior Court level. Isn't that correct?
No, Your Honor, because the Superior Court judge would have the transcript of the hearing.
They would have that record, but they wouldn't have a record of any Daubert arguments being made or any ruling by the IAB.
That's correct.
Because so to that extent, it would be de novo.
Well,
new argument from scratch.
I guess my problem is that I'm quibbling with the characterization of de novo, because de novo to me means that you start over and have a whole new hearing.
Okay, so it's not de novo, it's first impression.
Well, it's been a long time since I've had a comp case, so you'll have to help me out here. In essence, given that workers' comp is streamlined in a way to make it efficient and not as expensive as it might otherwise be, is it fair to say that the Industrial Action Board hears from both sides that the other side's expert is not credible, and you can, within that rubric, argue virtually anything you want about the lack of credibility on the part of that expert? And in the minds of the hearing officer or the board, aren't they thinking in terms of which expert is credible and which is not for any reason you want to raise?
Well, I think that's inherently correct, that obviously any witness who comes in on either side, their testimony should be weighed for credibility, and hopefully is, and in fact is. What we're saying is we agree it's streamlined, Your Honor, but what we're saying is the streamlined aspect of the proceeding is such that it prevents any kind of Daubert-type analysis.
What type of objections does the board entertain to any kind of evidence? Could you, for example, say if it's admissible, it's hearsay? Would the board rule on a hearsay objection?
They would. Not as a doctor, because obviously physicians' testimony gets around the hearsay rule because...
No, that's why I'm asking these questions separately. And I want to understand if you're advocating that we have an exception for Daubert objections, and I'm trying to put it in the context of what's going on now. It's my understanding that you can object to all sorts of evidence at a board hearing, but as I understand your argument, there's not a way to make an effective Daubert objection. Therefore, even though you can make other objections to all kinds of evidence at a board hearing, you can't make an effective Daubert objection, therefore we should have a separate rule for Daubert objections. Is that your position?
Yes, Your Honor. I agree with what the court has stated. We cannot really raise Daubert at the board level. And the reason we can't raise it is, number one, and I think Justice Jacobs touched on this first, these hearings are very short. First of all, a petition was filed, just to give you a quick idea, a petition was filed for benefits, no matter what kind of benefit. It might be medical bills, such as this case, which involves psychiatric bills, or it could be for total disability. Once that petition is filed, particularly a total disability petition, it has to be tried by statute, by statutory limit, within 4 months. So 4 months is not a lot of time in the world of litigation, as you know. And there's very little discovery. There's only a request for production, subpoenas, medical authorizations. We cannot take depositions of, for example, the medical witnesses, discovery depositions. We cannot even depose the plaintiff or claimant. Sometimes one doesn't even know what the claimant looks like until you walk into the hearing room, and all of a sudden there's a person sitting there, unlike a liability case.
Well, let me ask you two questions as far as the implications of what you're suggesting. One is, the United States Supreme Court has held that a Daubert ruling is subject to appellate review for an abuse of discretion. So normally, if somebody has made a decision, it either is in or out under Daubert, and then it's reviewed on appeal for abuse of discretion. And the second concern I have is that in the United States, the record is closed on appeal, and we don't take additional evidence. We review the record, which is consistent with reviewing somebody's exercise of discretion. And what you're suggesting is unprecedented to the extent that you're going to have the Superior Court for the first time in an appellate mode making this Daubert determination.
Well, actually, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. That's not what I'm proposing. And what I'm proposing is not that I'm asking the Superior Court to do a de novo, or whatever you want to call it. All I'm saying is this. You have a hearing. By statute, the substantial evidence test applies to these cases by legislative intent. The question becomes, how do you define what substantial evidence is? And how do you apply that substantial evidence rule? Because Superior Court judges have to do this constantly. They sit on these types of cases and other cases that involve substantial evidence, and they have to review the record and look at what's in the record and make a determination of whether what's in that record is substantial evidence to support the board's conclusion and opinion.
Under your proposal, are do you ever tell the board that you have a Daubert objection, or does the board go forth unaware that you have a unarticulated Daubert objection, and the first time somebody knows you have it is in the Superior Court?
Well, it depends. It would depend on the circumstance of how the testimony was presented. Most doctors, for example, we're talking medical doctors in this case, or at least medical type doctors, most doctors do not want to testify live, and they avoid coming live and refuse to come. So you have to schedule a deposition. In a four-month period, for example, or even a medical bill situation, which is maybe 6 months, these doctors' depositions are scheduled usually closer to the hearing or trial. For example, in this case, we pointed out in our brief, when Dr. Weisberg was deposed about a week and a half before the hearing, his transcript arrived 5 or 6 days later, and Dr. Friedenberg was deposed the Friday before the hearing, which I think was a Tuesday. The hearing was a Tuesday, and his transcript arrived Monday. So under the circumstance, it's impossible, it would be impossible to go to the board and say, I want to have a Daubert, I'm going to file a Daubert motion, because now that I've got this testimony, I can show you where it's not...
Why is that impossible? You can certainly ask the board for a continuance, can't you, if you need more time to do something?
I imagine one could, Your Honor, but the board does not grant continuances easily.
But then that could be reviewed for abuse of discretion by the board, then.
In that case, the Superior Court would have a lot of appeals to adjudicate based on abuse of discretion for that kind of situation. Unfortunately, Daubert is a difficult to apply at the board level.
And in this case, I understand that no one disputed the doctor was an expert. The question was his opinion admissible?
And did his opinion constitute substantial evidence? It can be admissible inherently, but not because the constituting, could not constitute, might not constitute substantial evidence.
Well, now, Daubert is, the reason that Daubert talks about gatekeeper, threshold determinations, and all sorts of things like that, is that if you prevail under Daubert, the opinion is not going to come in. So the opinion isn't going to be considered as part of the substantial evidence equation, because if you succeed under Daubert, the expert doesn't get to give the opinion.
Okay, I agree with that analysis. The problem here is that, again, the time factor of when one would present the motion, Justice Ridgely suggests filing for a continuance, and I respectfully suggest that motion would be denied pretty promptly, and we would have gone to a hearing in this case the day we went to a hearing, no matter what steps we had taken.
Can I ask a kind of a practical question based upon ignorance? Let's assume that you've only got a day or two. I understand that. But you've got a hearing coming up, and you're looking at the transcript of the doctor's deposition, and you say to yourself, you know, this doctor is not qualified to talk about what he's opining about. And so why can't you go into the hearing and say, you know, we object to this doctor's expert opinion coming in at all for the following reason, and basically make your Daubert kind of argument to the Industrial Action Board? Granted, it would be a very short one, and it wouldn't go into the kind of detail that you would like if you had been in Superior Court, for example, but you would explain that you've got a fundamental problem. This person should not be able to give an opinion because this person's opinion is not based upon scientific evidence, or whatever your rationale is, and then get a ruling. Even if we all expect the ruling will be, well, we'll take it anyhow, then you've got your record, you've attempted to explain what the problem is, and you've got an appealable issue.
That's correct, Your Honor. That can be done.
Why doesn't that accomplish your need, is what I'm saying.
Okay, the reason it does not accomplish our need is because we're still on appeal back to where we are today, because, or at least where we were in Superior Court. Because at that point, if the board overrules the objection, which they probably would. We're dealing with lay people,
right.
Not trained judges. And the same ruling were to come down, then on appeal, we obviously would argue that the board erred,
mm-hmm.
but to do that, we'd have to apply the same standards. And I'd have to write the same, basically the same brief and say, here's his deposition, here's what happened at the hearing, basically the same thing that goes on in Daubert hearings in Superior Court.
Your problem would be the same problem everybody has at a Daubert hearing, and that is that the United States Supreme Court has said the standard of review is abuse of discretion. So you're going to have to show that the board, whether they're layman or not, somehow abused its discretion in allowing the opinion to be considered.
Well, I think that's correct, Your Honor. There's a case that I ran across just recently that was decided by Judge Quillen, then Judge Quillen, called Minner, which the court might or might not be familiar with. Judge Quillen wrote, I think it's about a 48-page opinion involving Daubert. And one of the things he pointed out in that case is, and he said, at one point he said, for the most part, the problem with the plaintiff's medical experts is that they make unsupported jumps as to causation and then ask the court to make an unwarranted and unwise leap of faith. So what Judge Quillen was identifying, is, in my view, is the same problem that we're identifying in our appeal, which is how do you filter that out? I understand Justice Berger's analysis, and certainly that can be done, but I still submit that on appeal, we're going to have to go back, we're going to go back through the same process as to why the board erred in terms of admitting evidence. So I'm not sure, I'm not opposed to Justice Berger's approach, and I'm always in favor of making an objection to try to preserve a position. I'm not sure that it's going to take us as far as we think, at least, we should be able to travel.
Well, maybe you better give me some help here and tell me where is it you want to travel. Somewhere along the way, I fell off the road.
Okay. Thank you, Chief Justice, for the opportunity. Where I want to go and where I'm suggesting the court go is to permit the challenge that we made in this case at the Superior Court level, where we pointed out that Dr. Weisberg's testimony did not meet, in our view, did not meet the scientific standard. Now, that could have been decided at the Superior Court. It was not decided at the Superior Court for the reasons which I understand Judge Cooch enunciated, where he said, well, you can't do this here, you have to do it back at the board. But where we want to travel is to be able to present, for example, this case to Judge Cooch or any other judge and say, this is why that testimony was invalid.
But you agree you should be required to at least say, I object before the witness testifies and put that reason before the board, even if you anticipate they're going to say no?
Well, I think we can certainly object, and I think I responded when Justice Berger asked that question. The answer is yes.
Was there an objection in this case?
I don't recall if there was specifically in terms of we stipulated his qualifications as a medical doctor, which of course has nothing to do with the content of his testimony.
What new evidence have to be put into the record before the Superior Court to show precisely why the medical testimony that's being objected to isn't scientifically reliable?
No, Your Honor, there would not be any new evidence. It's the record below.
Well, then you would have to make a record below of some kind.
As far as the objection?
Well, you'd have to do more than object. You'd have to put in something, wouldn't you, to show that the opinion that that you're objecting to hasn't been peer-reviewed, that you know, it isn't accepted within within the scientific community. It doesn't follow the protocols, whatever. That's new, or at least independent evidence in support of a Daubert objection.
Well, that's the Daubert standard. The problem with presenting it the way Your Honor just enunciated.
I'm just asking, wouldn't there, you know, if whoever decides the Daubert issue would have to have that kind of evidence, correct?
Well, the person who decides the Daubert issue, or the party, in this case, in our suggestion, a judge, would have to have the record below
and also some record that would give credence to the Daubert arguments.
Well, the problem
is a yes or a no.
Well, the problem, let me answer it this way. I beg your pardon for 1 second. The problem with that is that, for example, if we get Dr. Weisberg's deposition,
no, no, no.
How do we
either have the evidence to support a Daubert argument or you don't? Correct?
Yeah, but that's correct. Well, yeah, you do or you don't, I agree.
Right. It has to be, at some level, that evidence has to be introduced, does it not?
Well, the problem with the Daubert is that in order to enunciate those standards that Your Honor just recited, which are part of Daubert, one would not be able to meet that standard in a 48-hour period.
And well, let's get away from that and just answer my question. You're either going to put that evidence in as new evidence before the Superior Court, or you would have to introduce it in some form before the Board. Isn't that right?
Well, what Your Honor is referring to is new evidence. I assume you're talking
about related evidence.
In this case, references to the DSM or some other treatise. I assume that's what
you're talking about. Or maybe an affidavit by an expert in the field that shows that the opinion that the doctor is proposing to give just doesn't bear up scientifically.
Well, in an ideal world, that would be perfect. But the problem is,
I'm not asking whether it would be perfect. I'm asking whether it isn't essential.
Well, it's an issue. It's an element. But I'm suggesting that it's impossible to do under the circumstances.
And when would it be done, if ever?
Well, I'm not talking about affidavits so much. It's just the analysis of what was said compared to what the standard is.
Okay, it can't be done before the Industrial Action Board because there isn't time.
Correct.
They wouldn't recognize it even if you did it. So the issue becomes, to what extent is the Superior Court trapped entirely by the record that comes to it from the Industrial Action Board, or can you supplement that record on appeal, which goes full circle to where I think Justice Harlan was a half an hour ago.
Well, the general rule, of course, is that you're stuck with the record below. However, there is a section in the statute at 19 Delaware Code, section, I think it's 2349, I have to bring the code with me, which says that you can supplement the record on motion to the court. So records can be supplemented.
And is that how you would anticipate the procedure would work if we were to accept your position?
I don't think you have to supplement the record usually. I think the way you can attack and apply Daubert is to simply do what we've done in this case, which is to show that it just doesn't meet the standard. I do not anticipate filing motions in every case asking the court to supplement the record because that could become obviously cumbersome. All we're asking is look at what happened. We're asking the Superior Court to look at what happened below, and we're trying to guide the court from our perspective as to what's wrong with it and ask the court to look at it and make that same adjudication that the court makes every day in a substantial evidence case, because the court looks at the record in these cases, and there are thousands of these cases that the Superior Court has to sit on. It happens every day. And we're not asking that you change the procedure. We're simply saying, here's what should be looked at as part of the process. It's just that simple.
But your topic argument here, as I understand it, is that there's no DSM-IV provision that's specifically applicable. Therefore, there's no basis to allow that opinion. Is that essentially your position, or have I misstated?
I'm not sure if I understood your question, Rod, but I think what we said in our brief is that under the DSM-IV, Dr. Weisberg's testimony did not meet the criteria set out in DSM-IV.
Okay. And that argument was made to the board?
No, I don't think we made that argument to the board.
All right. But you made the argument to the Superior Court on the basis that there's not substantial evidence.
Correct.
And the Superior Court rejected that argument.
Well, the Superior Court, basically, as I remember the decision, which I've read as recently as a couple of days ago, Superior Court said, well, you can't raise this now because you're raising a new issue on appeal, and therefore the court wasn't going to look at the DSM-IV issue. That was the question in terms of how, again, how substantial evidence is defined and utilized. There were other issues as well. I mean, obviously, there are other issues in this case beyond the Daubert issue, although I think the Daubert issue is the most important issue. That's why we're here today. The other issues probably would not warrant even an appeal to this court, let alone an argument.
If the strictly applied, Daubert would exclude the evidence, correct?
Daubert would say, yes, Daubert, even in a Superior Court appeal situation, Daubert would say that evidence does not meet the standard for these reasons, and therefore that opinion was void, basically, as though it were never given, which is what would happen in Superior Court in a liability case if you had a Daubert motion.
Obviously, however it's labeled, whether it's Daubert or Rule X under the rules of evidence, it's an application to exclude the evidence that should be made in the first instance to the board.
Well, in an ideal situation, I agree. Certainly a Superior Court situation, one would never wait to get to the Supreme Court. See, by the way, they messed up below letting this man or woman testify with these opinions. So the problem we're dealing with, I ran out of time, but the problem we're dealing with is that we are literally dealing with such different mechanisms here between the board and Superior Court. And I reserved 8 minutes if I can do that.
You went through your 8 minutes.
I did?
I got the light this one.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Well, I thank the court for its time and attention and the questions.
May it please the court. I'm Matt Borkowski for the appellee, Charles Hall, in this case. Daubert does have a position before the Industrial Accident Board, and in fact, in this case, a Daubert argument could have been made before the board, but wasn't done. First, regard to the discovery, there is discovery before the Industrial Accident Board. They allow requests for productions. We routinely get lists of questions from the employers asking for specific information, ranging from all the doctors my client has seen, to the studies my doctor relied upon, to any raw data from any testing that was done by my doctor. And we must provide that information. If we don't, then the employer has the opportunity to go forth before the board and request a legal hearing compelling us to produce that information to them.
How soon does the interrogatory get answered, or you submit to the other side a statement of what your medical expert will testify to and the basis for, both factually and from his profession, the basis on which you will rely for that opinion? How soon does that get to your opponent?
Well, the interrogatories are supposed to be answered within 15 days upon them being presented to the claimant.
And they would contain that typical interrogatory?
If it was asked by the other side. If the other side asked, and let me step back for a second, because they cannot ask interrogatories, but can ask requests for productions, which the courts have indicated includes lists, for example, to list the all the studies that you're...
Well, is there a stage, like I remember personal injury litigation, where there's an exchange of information on a summary of the opinion that will be given by each side's expert, and then the factual and whatever the professional basis may be for that opinion?
No, I think the court's referring to Rule 26 in the Superior Courts to identify the experts and the basis of their opinions. There is not before the Industrial Accident Board.
So the first time your opponent will find out the qualifications, the nature of the opinion, and the basis for the opinion of your expert would be when that expert's deposition was taken?
I would disagree with that. Number one, with regard...
I'm not making the statement that it's so. I'm asking the question, is that the first time?
No, because in the request for production, they could request the curriculum vitae of our doctor and get all the qualifications from our doctor. With regard to any opinions, they have the right to subpoena any of the records. They can also request any of the records that we have as well. So they have an opportunity to have an idea as to what the doctor's opinions are based upon the medical records for the claim in that case.
Well, if I remember correctly, there's a world of difference between what the medical record may show and what the expert's about to propose to testify to. My question is, when does your opponent first have an opportunity to find out what your expert's opinion will be and the basis for it?
I guess specifically, the court's correct, at the time of the deposition for the specific opinion and the basis for that opinion, unless that is contained in the medical records that's been provided to them prior to the doctor's deposition. But yes, in some instances, it is the case where the doctor, where they'll find out exactly the basis of the opinion at the time of the doctor's deposition before the industrial accident board. However, I would argue that based upon the amount of the discovery and the request for production that they're allowed, that the employer should have almost all, if not all, of the information they need prior to that deposition of the doctor.
In this particular case, when do you believe your opponent found out when the DSM did not support your expert's opinion?
Well, I think they should have known from the very beginning. They have not pointed out in any brief, any opinion, or any argument, the difference between Dr. Weisberg's deposition and what was contained in their words, the voluminous medical records that they had prior to his deposition. Nowhere have they pointed out any discrepancy or any differences between those opinions. They've indicated that this DSM-IV is the seminal, the standard, so they should have had that information prior to his deposition and been able to cross-examine Dr. Weisberg about any DSM-IV problems that may have occurred. Additionally, their doctor, Dr. Friedenberg, had a copy of Dr. Weisberg's deposition transcript and, in fact, testified in his deposition that he reviewed the transcript, and at no time did he state that Dr. Weisberg's opinions somehow ran afoul to the DSM-IV definition of a major depression. Certainly, if there was any type of issue, you would have expected that their medical expert would have rebutted this and would have provided this information, similar to the affidavit that Judge Jacobs brought up about earlier in a Daubert hearing. Certainly, in this case, their own physician could have stated and said that there's not a scientific basis for Dr. Weisberg's deposition or for his opinions, and then the argument could have been made at the hearing that Dr. Weisberg was not permitted to testify based upon a Daubert objection.
Now, your opponent is arguing that Daubert should be part of a substantial evidence evaluation, so that presumably if something would not be admissible under Daubert, it, as a matter of course, could never be substantial evidence. What's wrong with that?
Well, I think you have to look at this in the context of the industrial accident. I think that what the board does is make a mini Daubert argument or decision in every one of these cases. When they review the transcripts of the doctors that testify, they make that decision, number one, is this doctor qualified to testify first, and then secondly, they make and weigh any of the credibility of this doctor. So I think certainly that Daubert type of decision-making is done by the board every day as they're sitting. I think the important part is they have to have that information. They have to have an argument that says, at the very minimum, this doctor, his evidence that you're going to hear today is not substantial because it's not supported by the studies, by the testing that's being done. They also have to hear the evidence that it's based upon. And in this case, that certainly just wasn't done and could have been.
What's the process for doing that? I remember a phrase, legal hearing, for the board. I never fully understood what that meant. What does that mean? Is this a vehicle for addressing this, a legal hearing?
I think it could potentially, if the time constraints allowed it. The legal hearing is every Thursday. The Industrial Accident Board allows that you can request a legal hearing to address any of the issues. For example, if the request for production was not produced within 15 days, you can request the board for a legal hearing. You can request it basically on any other legal issue. So certainly, anybody that's willing to contest any doctor prior to a hearing would have the opportunity to ask the board for a legal hearing to address that issue.
So if it's on a Thursday, how do you do it in your opponent's situation where he gets the deposition transcript on a Friday and the hearing's on a Tuesday?
Well, I agree. You couldn't do it at a formal Thursday legal hearing, but you certainly could do it when you walk in front of the board and the board says, hi, welcome here today, and I would say, members of the board, before we start, I have a legal issue I'd like to address, and that legal issue is Dr. Weisberg's testimony is not sufficient under the Daubert, and have them rule on that issue before they even start.
Have you, in your experience, ever had a case where the board did make a Daubert-type ruling?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Only in the sense that it was couched in terms of the credibility in the doctor's credentials versus another doctor's credentials, but I haven't had where the board specifically said, okay, we're just going to address whether the doctor is permitted to testify in this case. It's more
because you can have a physician that's qualified to talk about a particular area and yet not be allowed to give an opinion that falls within that area or subject matter because of Daubert.
Correct. But I think the board could make that decision. If it was pointed out, again, there was another mechanism prior to the introduction of the doctor's testimony, the board asked whether there was any objections. The other side could make an argument and suggest, I object to the doctor's testimony, whether in whole or in part, based upon a Daubert argument to the Industrial Accidents Board, and they would make a ruling on that issue before the doctor's transcript was admitted into evidence. So certainly it could have been done in any case, but certainly could have been done in this case as well, too. And if you look at the argument that's being made in this case, it really is a true Daubert argument. The employer is not arguing that the Industrial Accident Board erred because they allowed Dr. Weisberg to testify. What they're arguing is that the board should not have given the weight to his testimony that it did, based upon this evidence that the Industrial Accident Board didn't even have at the time of the hearing.
We never get to weight unless something's admissible, and that's where I was confused, because if you make a Daubert ruling that the opinion isn't admissible, you're never looking at its weight when you're considering sufficiency of the evidence.
Correct. And the board makes rulings on the admissibility of evidence all the time, whether a certain document is admissible, whether a certain testimony is admissible or not, and the board does make those particular rulings. So certainly if that Daubert argument was made at the board could rule on that and not allow that transcript of the doctor to be entered into evidence to hear that.
Is there any parallel here, do you think, about the manner in which you've described the Industrial Accident Board could handle issues of this kind in Chancery, where the person who rules on the law and the person who makes the finding is the fact the same person, and often in Chancery, the Vice Chancellor or Chancellor will say, I understand your argument, I'll take the evidence and I'll consider whether it's admissible or not, or if it is, the weight to give to it in my final opinion. Is there any shocking dissimilarity here between the way Chancery handles it and the way you would propose the board to handle it?
No, not at all. I think the board does that in its analysis in every case of making a mini Daubert testimony in analysis before they issue a decision, saying, well, first of all, is this testimony from the doctor competent, and secondly, how much weight do we give that testimony? I think they do it every case before rendering a decision, before deciding to accept one doctor over another. I think they actually do make that analysis as the gatekeeper and the trier of fact all in one entity. The other issue in here in this case is really the entering of the DSM-IV into on appeal for the first time. Certainly there's been no indication as to why this evidence could not have been brought out before the Industrial Accident Board, or shown to the Industrial Accident Board. I think the danger of this is if the court were to change the ruling and basically adopt a two-tier standard of having substantial evidence before the board and then a new Daubert hearing before the Superior Court, in almost every case you're going to see appeals. Because certainly, if you're unsuccessful for the Industrial Accident Board, you're going to appeal the decision, you're going to find a treatise, you're going to find a study, some evidence that disagrees with the winning doctor's opinion. Now they can't rebut that on appeal, so I'm going to present that to the Superior Court and argue that under Daubert, that doctor should not have been permitted to testify below, be based upon this new information that we have, and ask the court to reverse that.
Well, what makes you say they would not be able to rebut that on appeal?
Well, if the Superior Court looks at this for the first time, there's no record below, just as in this case, of the information that I'm comparing that doctor's testimony to that treatise. So that doctor has no chance to rebut this new evidence, just as Dr. Weisberg does it in this case.
So I was surprised that you didn't cite Title 19, 2350B, which says in every appeal to the Superior Court, the cause shall be determined by the court from the record. So if we have a statute that says the Superior Superior Court has to look at the record, how can we possibly adopt a standard that expands the record?
Well, I agree. I don't think you can expand the record.
Is 2350B relevant to your position?
Yes. Yes, it is. And I think that's the that's part of the problem, is how do we address new evidence that's raised for the first time? Again, Dr. Weisberg didn't have a chance to be questioned about the DSM-IV.
Well, your argument is that we don't need to alter any of the traditional rules of appellate procedure, including what's embodied in the statute that Justice Holland referred to, because all of that could be done in the form of a preliminary motion at the beginning of the hearing for the IAB.
That's correct. In a preliminary motion, during the hearing, prior to the doctor actually testifying, or prior to the admission of the doctor's deposition, if the doctor's testifying live at the Industrial Accident Board, certainly that argument could be made either before the doctor testifies, or if there's no report regarding that doctor's opinion, immediately after that doctor testifies.
This case may be standalone in the sense that we're talking about the one issue of whether or not his testimony complied with a standard that should be used before he for the basis for his opinion. But what about the general case where you've got a half an hour max, you find out what the other side's expert's going to say, a mere 3, 4, 5, maybe a week if you're lucky, before the hearing? How much time do you have to develop a Daubert-type argument in order to present something before the Industrial Accident Board other than this doctor should not be able to give this opinion, even though he's qualified in a recognized profession and a sub-profession within that profession? The opinion I think he's about to give is inconsistent with the standard view in his field. How do you develop that in that kind of time frame?
Well, I think you can. I think if you go through discovery and request, through the request for productions, obtain all that information ahead of time, if you're prepared to make an argument to the board that this doctor, the weight of this doctor should not be giving any credit versus another doctor, you can certainly make that argument that this doctor cannot testify based upon the fact that his opinion isn't based upon any testing or is not reliable. Those arguments can be made, at least in a very short manner. One thing about the...
Well, you can make the argument, but that's not the issue. The issue is, what can you offer in evidence to support the fact that his opinion is not based on non-verifiable studies, and therefore it's unreliable in the scientific rather than the relevant sense that we use in the law? How do you make that in the absence of some factual basis to support your view?
Well, I think, one, in the questioning of the doctor during his deposition, there's been point made of the 30-minute rule. If you look at this deposition of their expert, Dr. Friedberg, in this case, it was an hour and 10 minutes. 73 out of 80 pages were questioning by counsel for the appellants, which is about an hour that they used on Dr. Friedberg. A quarter of that, 20 pages, was on his credentials.
Let me follow up the Chief Justice's question by circling back to a question that was asked earlier. You made reference to the Rule 26 interrogatory answer that basically flesh out during the discovery process what the expert is going to say and the basis for it. Is there any reason, is there any rule or even custom that precludes that from happening before the Industrial Accident Board, so that you have that information in some written form before taking the doctor's deposition?
And I think the reason for that is because of the issues that are brought before the Industrial Accident Board. This hearing was for $1,250 in psychiatric bills. If we had to get a report from Dr. Weisberg indicating the basis of his opinion, the diagnosis, etc., yes, it would probably cost about $400 or $300. It's not prudent for $1,250 bill in terms of medical bills. So it certainly is not reasonable in all of these issues before the Industrial Accident Board versus a case brought in the Superior Court.
Who pays the fee if you win?
For the medical reports, my client, me and my client. would have to pay for that. The doctor's deposition fee...
Well, you'd be willing to do that so your client wasn't out of pocket, wouldn't you?
I don't know about that. Not for a $1,250 case, I don't know.
So your answer is yes, that information could be developed, but in many cases it's not economic.
It's not economic to do so. And I think it would be an unfair burden on the claimants in these cases to require them to provide that type of information prior to a hearing as well.
Well, you're making Mr. Jillian's argument.
The last argument I'd just like to make is it goes back to what I was talking about earlier about the employer in this case really hasn't made a true Daubert argument. They're really arguing the weight of Dr. Weisberg's testimony. And even if you look through and what they've done is cut and pasted Dr. Weisberg's testimony versus the DSM-IV and said, gee, this doesn't equate, therefore his diagnosis doesn't comport with that. But if you actually look through Dr. Weisberg's transcript, his testimony, in fact, does show, if you compare those DSM-IV provisions with his testimony, that his opinion was consistent with the DSM-IV diagnosis of major depression as well, too. This case really boiled down to is, and this is the concern if the court were to change the standard, is strategy. An employer or a claimant may go into a hearing before the Industrial Accident Board, quickly stipulate to one doctor's to the opposing doctor's qualifications, go into a lengthy dissertation on their doctor's qualifications, and then on appeal raise a Daubert argument with new evidence, because below their argument is, well, our doctor's more qualified than their doctor, so they're certainly not going to ask my doctor about his qualifications or his credibilities. But then on appeal, find a study that shows and says that, well, the doctor's testimony didn't comport with this particular study, therefore he shouldn't have been able to testify in the first place.
Well, you're mixing apples and oranges, aren't you, when you talk about qualifications and then say the dispute is whether he could give the particular opinion that he gave?
Well, again, I think that's correct. I guess my illustration is that before the board, the argument could be, well, gee, the doctor's qualifications are better than the other one, and then create a different standard on appeal and say, well, gee, under Daubert, this doctor should not have testified me based upon this information that I'm providing to the court for the first time. And I think that causes a lot of problems and, again, it's going to create more litigation for the courts and also for the board. These cases, part of the procedure of having 120 days for them having decided, it gives the claimant some finality to be able to go and know that their case is going to be over after a period of time. But if we're going before the board, going up on appeal, having a Daubert issue raised, and then going back to the board where, my client would then have to have their doctor testify again to address any of the Daubert issues that came up on appeal for the first time, that's additional money that the claimant's going to have to spend on that doctor, plus additional delay and additional time that we have. Thank you,
Counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.